Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry, with host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
To the show tonight, our special guest is Drew Kerr. Drew, are you with me?
I'm with you, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Yes, welcome to the show. Drew, let's start off. What is poetry?
A very special question. Well, I hope it's okay if I answer that with a bit of an abstract thought and a little history. I think that poetry is witness. I think that's what I now think poetry is. Over the last few years, I think my engagement with poetry has morphed quite a bit. But now I think it's witness. And what I mean by that is that poetry has a kind of a life of its own, maybe to say, but I think it's really an important dimension of society. And in that regard, it really engages with society, or in my opinion, it should. I think it's the responsibility of poets to kind of articulate or to mobilize or figure out ways of bringing the witness of poetry to other people. And whatever form that takes is what I would call poetry. Yeah, I think I can leave it there. We can keep unpacking that as we go.
All right. I understand. What sparked your initial interest or your love of poetry?
Yeah, that's a big question. I think a lot of my early exposure to poetry was pretty accidental or maybe just situational. I remember being in like third and fifth grade, and I was in a really small kindergarten through eighth grade school, and there are all sorts of these kind of after-school poetry-type programs or music programs and just happening to be at some of these poetry ones and writing stuff or going to the library. I grew up in East Tennessee, and my local library had this cool, I don't know if it was weekly or monthly, but every Wednesday or whatever Wednesdays it was that this met, there would be these poetry readings, and I remember going to those. And that really impacted me. I remember being in fourth grade and speaking at one of those and being absolutely terrified. So since that early time, I've definitely spaced out away from poetry world for a while. And in high school, I got really into kind of the idyllic writers and a lot of the more pastoral presentation of life or history, and a lot of the naturalistic writing, a lot of the beat writing, and that kind of grew through college and grad school to emerge into this very socially engaged poetry. A lot of that I've learned from, at least here within kind of the States or the American world. I think Adrienne Rich and Audre Lorde are quite significant for me. But then that's really shifted in the last 3 or 4 years, that I take a lot of influence from South Asia. I want to say I kind of grew up in India. I kind of came into my political and social understanding over the last 5 years. I've been in and out of India, and three of those pretty contiguously in country. And I started out learning Urdu, so I moved to India to learn Urdu, and kind of by virtue of learning Urdu, one also learns poetry. It's kind of wrapped up all together. And something that really was important for me was kind of taking that learning into a more lived experience. And when the British left the subcontinent, so pre-1947, and then the partition and the creation of Pakistan happened, there actually was this incredible movement called the Progressive Writers Association, or Association of Progressive Writers Movement. And this was a group that ranged between India and Pakistan from the 20s, 30s into the 50s, 60s. And the short story writers, playwrights, singers, songwriters, and poets. And they lived by, they didn't just write by, they literally lived by this credo that progressive poetry should deal with the concerns of the world, and poets should create from these issues a freedom, revolution, and struggle against oppression. And I very much believe and strive for this also.
Well, let me ask this question. You know, you talked about lived experiences. I believe that lived experiences are the stories that people share about themselves and their world. How would you define lived experiences?
That sounds right on the money to me.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's so concise and precise, and I think that's kind of the beauty of poetry, is that it allows, or at least invites, an opportunity for connection about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let's begin this journey. Please share one of your works.
Thank you. Yeah, I would love to. I've got kind of a funky one that I thought would be fun to start off with. So as I mentioned about, you know, that high school, college phase, I was kind of into the more idyllic and the beat poetry. I also really love Lewis Carroll and read a lot of Alice in Wonderland and Looking Glass. And so I have one of my earlier pieces really tries to inhabit that type of world. And I'd love to start off with sharing that one.
All right, great.
All right, so this is in the puzzle form, called In Wonderland. Drawn by a grin of silly desire somewhere, you stared for long, curious what of you it will require somewhere. Don't rely too much on either eye. Sight won't help escape whenever arises mental mire somewhere. It does not matter which way you go, as long as you will acquire somewhere. Many tread the path from some here to some there, but only heed those who inspire somewhere. Beware who asks for up, down, or the time, all games of the hair and formal attire somewhere. That hatter, he's madder than the hair. What curious nonsense he spouts from false ire somewhere. Though you'll want to follow, sleepily drawing the sounds closer, hide yourself from the choir somewhere. The roses selfishly display their best for you. Little do they know they're first to the fire somewhere. How quickly you question and tire. Do you take me for a mundane liar somewhere? Though it is quite absurd to listen to a cat you can't fully see. No matter, we'll meet again to conspire somewhere. Thank you.
You've mentioned a number of different things. What would you view as being some of the predominant themes of your work?
Such a fun question. You know, I think social engagement and resistance in the sense of like calling out and addressing and trying to confront oppression or oppressive factors. These are drivers of poetry to me in my writing. As far as themes go, outside of that, a kind of a consistent and definitely pervading thought is kind of the experience of language.
All right.
The experience of language in the abstract, meaning experiences of languages as they're lived. So we may call that the vernacular, but something in that realm kind of sticks out to me, or maybe comes through, I think, a lot of my writing.
All right. Well, please share another piece.
Yeah, I'd love to. So this one that I've got for you is exactly within the realm of experiencing language. But it takes for its muse rum.
All right.
So, rum. I imbibe deep inhales of old monks that beg praise from illusions, only to succumb to the glaze from illusions. Listening from my mind's ear, seduced by the whispers of willows, I listen, trying to outwit and outwait the days from illusions. But I'm found by sweet laughs of lullabies to momentarily understand the craze from illusions. It is merely one of many murmurs of mountains where I walk, soaking the setting rays from illusions. And wonder, wandering within the breaths of breezes before I lose myself for days from illusions. Uninhibitedly, I thrust innumerable kisses of questions at you, but not one stays from illusions. We hazily distinguish the dreams of deserts while attempting to raise from illusions our own size of stars. Instead, we sit and continue to sip, as always, from illusions. Never will we forget, under these caresses of creation, we're alive, too ablaze from illusions. Thank you.
We'll take a brief break and we'll be right back.
Yeah, thanks.
My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. I'd like to welcome you to Quintessential Listening Poetry. I'm here with Drew Kerr. The call-in number is 646-787-1631 if you have a question for Drew. Drew, you mentioned Adrienne Rich and Audre Lorde. Who are three of your most popular historical poets?
All right. So in the historical realm, I've got to shift over to South Asia.
Okay.
I think a primary figure for me and the current generation in a lot of ways is Fayaz Ahmed Fayaz. He's a Pakistani Urdu writing poet who was quite prominent in kind of creating and being part of the creation of the imagination of Pakistan. And, you know, his poetry was really important to speak against the British before 1947, before they left. Exactly. And then post 47, trying to address kind of the ills of the violences that were perpetuated with relocating peoples. So Fayaz Ahmed Fayaz is really important to me. In that same vein, Femida Riaz, she's not as historical as a figure, but in that realm of kind of progressive Urdu poetry out of Pakistan, and really an important figure in the feminist wave that came out of the 70s and 60s to some extent. So these have been some important figures in my poetry education. But you asked for three. Let me think of one other. Man, right now I'm just getting hit with modern characters. Can I share with you a contemporary writer?
Okay, not a problem. What exactly is Urdu poetry?
So I guess in an immediate sense, Urdu poetry is that poetry which is written in the Urdu language.
Okay.
But to be a little more careful with my language here, Urdu poetry, as it kind of stands out in the global scene of literature, typically is written in the ghazal form. So ghazals are a Persian form that have made up the poems that I've shared so far tonight, but they follow a specific couplet structure. So usually at least 6 or 8 couplets with a rhyme scheme of the second to last word is the repeated rhyme in each couplet, and the last word or last few words is a repeated refrain. So with that one I shared about, that first one I shared about Wonderland, the rhyme there was require, mire, acquire, attire, this kind of rhyme. And then the refrain was somewhere. So somewhere was the last word of every second line of each couplet. So the Ghazal has a very long-standing historic influence within the subcontinent, but particularly Urdu poetry. And it's a kind of automatic form that Urdu lends itself to. Otherwise, besides the form, the themes that Urdu poetry typically imbue are somewhere between sorrow or not always melancholy in like the such negative, depressing sense, but in that longing. Urdu poetry really gravitates towards the lost lover in whatever imagination that could be, whether that's, you know, like in a religious sense or romantic. But Urdu poetry really revolves in this sphere.
Right. When you write, is it primarily pen and paper, computer notebooks? How do you write?
Yeah, I'm a tactile guy. I've got to have my pen and paper, and I've got very specific pens for that matter. I wish I had some really kind of sexy style of writing, and when I had like my handwriting or, you know, some beautiful form or something. But as long as I can get some plain, lineless paper and Stabilo felt tip 0.4 millimeter pens, I'm good to go.
We'll share another piece of your work.
All right, absolutely. So in this realm of poets, currently Ross Gay and Ada Limón are really important for my thinking. I just feel like they have some really immense attention to simultaneity and an invitation to think with them. So I have this one poem that is an answer to a poem Ada Limón wrote. It's in her most recent collection. Let me pull it up here. But she writes this poem about the dandelions. And I was quite intrigued with that. So this is my reaction to Ada Limón's poem about dandelions. It's vicious, made for a time that requires tenacity, a way of remaking the toughest self while everyone else is asleep. Dent de Lion, so she tells me, is the French for the lion's tooth, a voracious dandelion, its goldens, its whites, its seeds, spread on their own wings of self-love or conquest or indiscretion or misdirection. Vicious, she says. Propitious, I ask. Tenacity, she stresses. Why? I undress every petal from my dandelion's body, leaving it a toothless lion, a conqueror turned albatross, directing its cells to unlimited unknowns. Vicious, I understand. Thank you.
Do you sit and think through every word of every stanza, or do you write freely and just allow the words to flow?
I try to let words flow, but that is tough for me. That is super tough for me.
Okay. Why is it tough? What makes it tough?
I could do that.
Okay.
I get hung up so in the sense of intentionally thinking through every word, I end up thinking through every word.
Right.
I just feel like I want to be careful with the creation and you know, give each word its respect. But lately I have been getting better at flowing a little bit, as long as I keep myself from thinking too much.
Yes.
But my poetry does come much slower, and I try to write thoughtful poetry. So in that sense, I do think a lot while I'm writing it. But yeah, I'm working on that flow. What's your process? How does that work for you?
I think primarily I sit and think through every word of every
Yeah.
stanza to make sure that
Yeah.
it does flow. I think that's my practice. That's my practice.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, share another piece of your work. Share another piece of your work.
Okay. So I've got one other here that is quite a shift from the previous few that I've shared. This is very
Okay.
much more in my more recent kind of instantiation as poetry as a social force. This poem is titled Objection to Clarification. In other words, I dwell, swell into an unformed, unshared shadow because the simple transition you find, in other words, euphemizes my other worlds, those worlds inhabiting flames that your other words cannot tame, those worlds that are full of dancing, prancing, gaily glancing at sounds, so full of emotion, they could just be aural textures of devotion, filling all the open spaces with commotion, revolution like the effortless ocean in slow motion, somehow consuming, yet somehow resuming, while somehow blooming, as if those foamy rip curls forgot their liquid furls and released infinite petals, scattered everywhere except for one that settles right beside the gun. Your other words create to cut down my fantasy, majesty, silly fet that lets wild confusion, illusion, delusion, which, in other words, are subjected to occlusion. Those worlds burn, turn left and right in objection to abuse and might. Those worlds replete with question marks, but free from punctuation, save sparks of wonder that show flames healing touch when applied with open, honest feeling. In other words, I get lost instead of you finding clarification. Why undress, redress my soul into simplification? Is it your fear, my tear we're fighting for? In other words, the gore reveals the real recoil from my soil that births more saplings who root into other worlds, not who live in other words. Thank you.
Your work
Yeah.
focuses on social action, social justice issues. Am I correct?
Aspiring to, yes, it's aspiring to
Aspiring
do
to.
that.
Okay. What do you see as being the role of a poet in modern day society?
Such an important question. I think my thoughts around poets' responsibilities is reflective of my thoughts about artists' responsibilities. I just happen to orient on poetry as an inclination that way. But really, like the question we opened with about what is poetry, I think because I think poetry is witness, I think that the role of the poet is to share and spread that witness of society. As the progressive writers were described as focusing on themes of revolution and against the struggle against oppression. I think very much that plays very live today and is more than ever important. And yeah, I think that's where I'm at with it. I wish, so I had a short time frame working in the Library of Congress, and I was just amazed at all of the incredible events that, the poet laureate creates and hosts. But I just wish there was a way that those could be more widely known. I think that would be exactly the office or exactly the position that would be a shining light for what it is we're talking about here and in raising the question of, what's the role of a poet in society? I think whoever holds that seat would be just has such an opportunity to live the answer of what that question may gesture towards. Yeah.
Please share another piece of your work.
Yeah, absolutely. So in this guise of poets being social activists. This following guzzle was inspired and written from Delhi on November 6, 2016, which the nighttime November 6th would have been the morning time November 6th in the U.S. So this is going into the elections. Without poetry, did you hear that man on the street? His speeches, all vulgarity without poetry. He'll never survive sorrow's severity without poetry. I walk through the circus questioning my own reality. My days deceive clarity without poetry. He talked of the margins of sins with evil grins. How could I trust his words as verity without poetry? I complained to God and found reply. Of course there's no solidarity without poetry. That man on the street, his aim couldn't be more than vain in this dirty rain, or else he'd see there's no prosperity without poetry. Man on the street, get out the way. Take your false charity without poetry. What words ever found him from a man on the street? Something to remember, something about rarity without poetry. On this street, I can't understand through the fires of my own confusions, all the profanity erasing any parody without poetry. This circus, the body of that man on the street, his words, oh, what a mockery, inside this perverse hilarity without poetry. The stench of his breath, spoiled by sentences and full stops, creates further polarity without poetry. Robbed of sanity, I check for pulse, yours, anyone's, no beat, no murmur. Can I provide for posterity without poetry? In this land of belief, I call to another god. What is water? What is blood? Forget vascularity without poetry. The only reply comes from this fine wine. Drew, just go off this street to the rails of alterity without poetry. Thank you.
Wow. I complain to God. Very powerful line. Would you recite that one for me again?
In full.
Would you mind? In full, yes.
Absolutely. Without
yes.
poetry. No, I'm. Thanks for calling it back. That one's, you know, I don't know if poets often say that they're proud of what they write. But me, as someone who tries to write poetry, this is one of only maybe one that I claim
okay.
to be proud of.
All right. Beautiful.
Without poetry. Did you hear that man on the street? His speeches, all vulgarity without poetry. He'll never survive sorrow's severity without poetry. I walk through the circus questioning my own reality. My days deceive clarity without poetry. He talked of the margins of sins with evil grins. How could I trust his words as verity without poetry? I complained to God and found reply. Of course there's no solidarity without poetry. That man on the street, his aim couldn't be more than vain in this dirty rain, or else he'd see there's no prosperity without poetry. Man on the street, get out the way, take your false charity without poetry. What words ever found him from a man on the street? Something to remember, something about rarity without poetry? On this street, I can't understand through the fires of my own confusions, all the profanity erasing any parody without poetry. This circus, the body of that man on the street, his words, all what a mockery, inside this perverse hilarity without poetry. The stench of his breath, spoiled by sentences and full stops, creates further polarity without poetry. Robbed of sanity, I check for pulse, yours, anyone's, no beat, no murmur. Can I provide for posterity without poetry? In this land of belief, I call to another god. What is water? What is blood? Forget vascularity without poetry. The only reply comes from this fine wine. Drew, just go off the street to the rails of alterity without poetry. Thank you.
Oh, wow. I really like that.
Yeah.
You know, they say
yeah.
that to see the world that with complete honesty, one should look to comedians, artists, and poets. What do you think emerges naturally from your work?
Well, just a quick comment on your intro. I think that I could not agree more. I think those are exactly the people we need. what emerges from my work? What I hope emerges is an invitation to engage. I really hope that whatever my writing And I usually speak in the terms of writing. I have recently started trying out open mics. So that's a very special engagement with poetry that's new to me. But I still think in writing terms. I'm still working on thinking through speaking terms. But I hope that my writing is inviting, and I hope that whomever it reaches, whether it's in written form or spoken form, feels that open opportunity and invitation to think with whatever might hit them. Some of my stuff really ranges more into the abstract realm and can totally be nonsensical or might seem like it's like so specific. And what I'm hoping is that whichever place one finds himself in thinking about that, they still can see themselves in it, whatever might speak to them. In this one we just read, you know, what happens to them without poetry? You know, what might be the circus for them? You know, I hope that that comes. I hope that invitation comes, and that maybe that's also a belief I have about kind of the role of poetry is within the realm of arts, that I think it connects people. I think it can connect people, and I hope that mine strives for that as well.
All right. I like that. Please share another piece of your work. Let's focus on your work. Please share another piece on your work.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. So in this realm of connecting, there was a period last year that I was just like super frustrated and unable to produce something that I thought was a poem. So I tried to just read a lot. I was reading a lot of Adrienne Rich and decided that I would write a found poem from different poems of Adrienne Rich. And so this short little piece came out of that. Found poem. A language is a map of our failures. The words are maps. The words are purposes. A word can do this. Words stream past me. Poetry. A last attempt. The language is a dialect called metaphor. Tonight, I think no poetry will serve. Just will you stay looking straight at me a while longer. A wild patience has taken me this far. Thank you.
What do you think makes a poem good?
Oh, what makes a poem good? Well, that's a tough question. I think a poem is good if someone thinks it's good. And I don't mean to be flippant with that, but...
Okay.
But
No, I like that answer.
Yeah. Yeah, what I mean is, you know, I've shared that I think poetry should be shared, right? I think poetry is a force to connect people. And so what is something? What is a poem? What is something written? What is something spoken to oneself until it's given to someone else? And in that regard, I think that exchange, that process of sharing, when someone else receives something of yours in the poetic form and it means something to them, I think that's what makes a poem good. I think that's when we can use those kind of value terms.
All right. Well, share another piece of your work. Because all of your work is good.
Well, Michael, thank you for those generous words.
No, it's true.
So I've got one. Okay, I've got two in mind. Let me give you one, and we'll figure out the second one later.
You can share them back to back if you like. You can share them back to back if you like.
Yeah, let's do it. So this one, so I mentioned this period that the found poem of Adrienne Rich came out of. This next poem came right after that, so I kind of got some mojo flowing again. And I was still really interested in different forms of poetry. And I haven't experimented much with the Golden Shovel, which was, I think, created is the right word, created by Terrence Hayes in honor of Gwendolyn Brooks. And so the way that this type of poem works is one takes a line or some sort of phrase or a poem or something, and each of the words becomes the last word for every line.
All right.
And so I was reading this really fantastic novel called The Latitudes of Longing, and I took my favorite sentence from the whole book. The universe may have started with a bang, but the possibilities were conceived in silence. So this sentence forms the rubric for this golden shovel, universe. When my words don't match the sweet tides ebbing towards your universe, or my attention or my voice may break, I'm left searching. What have I done? Sounds, scents, scenes reflect from when we started. Challenged, upset waves of intensities which, with our densities, evoked, provoked, stoked, a series of tsunamis that don't just bang. They continually erode us down to nothing but the rawness, tenderness, the love we too desperately seek in each other's possibilities. If it were any other way, any other storm conceived, would our worlds collide in another life, in stranger silence? Thank you.
Nice.
And the second poem is one of my most recently written poems. This poem is titled Sometimes, and I shared with you that I recently started trying out open mics, and I've been very, very blessed and very fortunate to join the amazing DCGPI. So in Washington, D.C., the Guerrilla Poets Insurgency has been more than generous to let me hang around with them every second Tuesday of the month. And
Bossa Bistro.
At Bossa Bistro. So everyone, please go. Some fantastic, fantastic events. And I was able to go to the June event. That was my last time that I was able to join. And I really wanted to write a new piece for the night. I really, really wanted a new piece for the night. And I was just stuck. Nothing was coming. Nothing was coming for all week or the week preceding. And so on the way to the open mic that night, this piece came out. So the first time reading it through was on stage at GPI.
Wow.
So sometimes. Sometimes I write down words, and I follow their syllables until I'm past lost in their vibrations and reverberations. Sometimes that lands me in trouble, or sometimes on foreign soils where I have to rehearse and rehearse the sounds until I'm innocent, or can taste their splendid flavors. Sometimes the lists rhyme, stones, bones, zones, hormones. Sometimes the lists bloom, zinnia, fuchsia, sunflower, thyme. Sometimes the lists explode with alliteration or a sonnet connecting consonants and constellations of murmurs and slurs. Sometimes I collect these lists and invoke them, invite them into form or flow, really whichever they see fit. Sometimes Ghazals swim out, while other times rubaiyats roll with quatrains interlocked, occasionally replete with euphemism. Those come quite quickly. Sometimes I crumble after finding lines from muses who teach me what it is to live. Adrian Rich whispered, a wild patience has taken me this far. Susan Sontag charged, love words, agonize over sentences, and pay attention to the world. And Barbara Jane Rise pointed, this is where you shall worship. At the intersections of distilled deities and memory's sharp edges. And sometimes, when I can do all this, with some words wound together, language linked, mouth moving, I find myself with you to share a poem. Thank you.
You know, writers and poets write for a myriad of reasons. Some write primarily to speak a message to their audience. Others write because to stay silent is not an option. Why do you write?
Silence is not an option. Absolutely true. I think that is at the bedrock of why I write. And I think why I continue to write and why I seek out those who write is to expand that community, is to try to find that community of people who know that silence is not an option.
Well, let's take a brief break, and we'll be right back.
Sounds good. Thanks, Michael.
Good evening. I'm Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here with Drew Kerr. The telephone number is 646-787-1631. If you have a question for Drew, please give us a call. Drew, share another of your pieces of your work.
Yeah, absolutely. So to continue the idea from the last poem about different types of forms that emerge, this poem is an unmetered rubaiyat. So generally, rubaiyat's also another Persian form that I'm really fascinated with. But rubaiyat's are sets of quatrains that follow an alternating rhyme scheme. And they're usually metered, but this one's unmetered. This one is specifically devoted to the city of Delhi. Rhapsody for Delhi. How do you recall it? Tughlakabad, Shahjahanabad, Dirty Delhi, a mirror of gold into repeated times far too old to really see yourself near, to rhapsodies and mushairas and mutinies that all somehow shared a harmony, that at one time and some other time bestowed clarity, made the air a little clearer, which is impossible to say about now. I know not a gravity strong enough to suck away the stains on my skin, pains in my lungs left from this oxygen banditry, even following south, the greens and trees on that marg are a window. My erogenous ears struggle to hear the sounds and sirens for their hidden sensuality. But at least my hands and mind know plenty will find me past this noisy window. The air indices say outside is killing me, but I have to go, revel in the show that this filthy place hides from most seekers. In my paradigm, cough out its pollution, drink in its cloudy solution, lost in a once meadow. It's a mouthful. You'll drown if you walk with eyes down and heart closed. You'll miss the rhyme that magically floats out of Ferozabad Thursday supplication time. But it's worth it for this mouthfeel. Something motherly, definitely otherly in the soft night that manages to squeeze through and embraces you. What a crime to my soul to spurn this city's Jesus and tipsy-turvy slurs heard in the right spaces, which always bring me back with matches in my front pocket. A light for the cigarettes and conversations on your people's lips. Even for a few, I'll linger. Finger this striking box just to feel the fire before my flight. And it's such a shame to miss a part of the city, that unique hue left for my needy next time. My eyes towards Jahanpana, off Nehru Place. I'll find refuge after an auto ride, fast and slow, driven by something dear than any simple body, a low smile and departure for this subdued boy. Thank you.
Wow. Where do you write, Drew? Where do you go to write?
Well, that one was written on a city bus.
Was it?
kind of cruising through different parts of between Old Delhi and New Delhi. But I try to always keep a notepad with me, so I just write whenever I'm in in a spot to write. So lately that's been in a lot of buses or planes. So any of these kind of liminal periods, I try to write down some thoughts. But I guess ideally I'd be somewhere outside, you know, just enough sunshine, not too hot. But
right.
Yeah. But these days, just kind of wherever I can get it.
Wherever you can do it. I understand. You know, to you, what are some of the most prevalent ingredients that go into this concoction we call a poem?
Yeah. And I really appreciate your phrasing around ingredients and concoction here because, you know, I don't think, just in the same way that I don't think there's any type of objective way that you can say a poem is good, I also just don't think there's any way that we can call something a poem or not a poem. But I do think some really central ingredients here are intention. I think that, you know, I don't think a writer has to sit down with some destination in mind or even necessarily what the journey looks like. But I think the intention of designating a writing period or thinking and writing is important to a poem or to the creation of what we may call a poem. I think that by extension of that, some sort of emotion. I think some sort of emotion connected into it, into that delivery is important. I'd like to argue, or maybe I'd just like to explore the idea that a potential third ingredient would be an audience.
All right.
Again, that one I'm trying to just kind of feel out and explore. But I think that's an important dimension to a poem. And I wouldn't have that language or the idea if I hadn't just started to try to do open mics. But I realized that most of my poetry is readable poetry. It's not quite speakable poetry.
Mm-hmm.
At least I'm not sure that it is. I hope that the things that I've shared tonight so far have, you know, not been too transgressive. but
very accessible.
I think that, you know, I think that there are differences. I think that there are differences when poems use certain, you know, like visual forms to represent or communicate something that are accessible in verbal communication. And so thinking about that might be, and thus, you know, which type of audience a poem or this concoction is delivered to, I think is an important dimension there that could be, you know, a particular type of ingredient to give it a special kind of spice.
You know, all poets have several words that come up over and over again. Words or sentences that they just can't help but use in their work. What are three of your absolute favorite words to use?
Well, just kind of thinking as I've been reading tonight, it seems like space is a key one.
All right.
I think space is one. Other than that, not to be arbitrary, but I really do try to not get caught up on words.
Okay.
I mean, in terms of like reusing them, a lot of these forms call for rhymes or repetition. And so for that, I do have a lot of repeated words, but those are like by necessity. I think space and I think the word poetry or poem itself are very repeated in my thinking. And what would be a third one? I don't know. Have you recognized any others that keep ringing to you?
Let's see. Nothing that I can think of at the moment. I mean, your work is so varied.
Okay.
Not one
I'll
that
see,
I can
I'll think
of,
on.
No.
Yeah.
Well, how about this? You recite another one, and that way I'll pick out a word that you use.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Share another piece of your work. All right.
I will happily share a piece that focuses on space. So this is a very special poem to me. This was written late 2017. I was living in kind of northwest India in the mountains, and that's a mountain desert area. It's past the rain shadow, so it's cold, cold nights, and hot, hot tea is crucial. So I was sitting with two dear friends in this little shack. And so this poem literally emerged like contemporaneously as all this was going. So I was like running home to write this down as I,
all right.
as I left that. Something about space. There's something about space in this dark, tight place that I just can't figure. I'm lacking some trigger, so I take another glass of butter tea before letting it pass. They say, third time's a charm. I'll take mine and the rhymes, hoping it applies to multiple tries. This room, barely wide enough to lay down a broom. We talk of red fox, blue sheep, other ungulates and bear. I really should have kept that fourth layer. They in Ladakhi, me seasoning in Urdu, it's far outside my reasoning. So really, it matters not. While the kerosene stove's hot, mobile phone propped above on the ledge as a flashlight, shit, I don't have the bets to hedge, walking home in the dark, battling bite or bark, but still not going yet. While we three sit in file, crowded over one another, plying each other as a brother. And I finally get it straight, before being too late, that in this dark, tight place, there's something about space. Thank you.
All right. You know, some poets are also active in other creative areas. What are some of your favorite non-poetry literature activities?
Non-poetry literature activities. Well, I love short stories. I absolutely love short stories.
Do you write
them? I don't write them. I definitely stay away from writing them. I leave that to the short story writers.
Okay. All right.
But I seek refuge in that literary outlet when I'm not in the poetry world. And, you know, your question speaks to a kind of a few different pieces of my mind. I am pursuing a PhD, and the focus of that is actually about poets themselves and exactly a lot of the questions that you raised, like what is their role within their societies. And these are particularly situated poets within Northwest India in the region called Kashmir. And so reading their work and reading or listening to their interviews takes up a special part of my time. And so that in a way is an extension outside of my own poetic exercise, but into their world. And yeah, so it's a little bit of a different outlet from my poetry world.
Right.
Other than that, I listen to a lot of music. That's about it.
Okay, sounds very nice. Have you ever been published?
I have been published twice. Once was in those early incipient buddy days of that third, fourth, fifth grade life that I told you about.
All right.
Got swept up in some cool Pan-Appalachia youth writing poetry collection. And so this poem that I wrote about a clown, well, about the circus, and then focus on this clown, was chosen for that compilation, which is pretty cool. But in my adult life, I got recently published in this zine by a group in Delhi, and it was that Rubaiyat dedicated to Delhi that I read just a few poems ago. So that was the one that got published this past winter.
All right. Well, please share another piece of your work.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to. So this poem is kind of funky. It definitely tries to explore the experience of language. And it's in the ghazal form, colors. I try seeking reality from belied colors. I try seeking reality from belied colors, but maybe scents and sounds would offer more than dyed colors. Kaleidoscopic, they all converged once. I thought I could distinguish outside colors, something of truth or of love or of fate or of time. But what do I know about the passions in which reside colors? They linger here and tease there only to prove I cannot bribe colors.
What a mistake to think just eyes could communicate to shied colors. All that I need to hear. How confused I've become by these falsely allied colors. Neither in sunshine nor in blood could I subside. Colors. I see with my eyes closed. But what do I know about the secrets where you hide colors? Thank you.
How has your idea of what poetry is and what poetry can do changed since you began writing?
Oh, man, it has changed tremendously.
Sure.
And so surprisingly to me, like honestly so surprisingly to me, I was just like diehard Walt Whitman kind of reader and living in the grass. And, you know, I was reading a lot of these kind of pastoral and very naturalistic writing alongside the beats. And I guess once I got more into some of that other poetry, I don't know, maybe like Allen Ginsberg and kind of that speed, I started thinking more and getting more apprised to the social nature, the social necessity of literature at large. Mm-hmm. And I really started finding a really resonant groove with poets and poetry being a social force. So that's been a really tremendous evolution in my thinking and really my expectation of what I look for when I read poetry, type of poetry readings I look for, seek out. And as it's turned out with GPI, the kind of community that I get to join is finding individuals who share like thoughts that poetry is an important voice. Poetry is an important platform to speak for oneself, speak about oneself, or speak about our communities.
Well, please favor us with one more poem.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So one to close out the night. Let me think. Can I share with one that's just real, real quick? Well, let me do two. I have two short ones, okay?
Okay. All right.
So I didn't know that there was a poetry day, but apparently 21st of March is poetry day. I think that's
yes,
the right
World
day.
Poetry Day, yes. Mm-hmm.
World Poetry Day, yeah. So just in the last 2 years, I've learned about that. And this past poetry day on March 21st, I was kind of surrounded by a bunch of different Urdu collections. And I'd love to read this and then kind of unpack who these people are. On Poetry Day, Rumi's ruminating, Khalid's guzzles, Mir's tears, Faiz's freedoms, me, soaked in their layers of prayers. Thank you. So all these names that I just mentioned, Rumi, Khalid, Mir, Faiz, these are kind of the larger-than-life people when it comes to the Persian and Urdu world of poetry. And it just seemed kind of ironic that on 21st March, I was just kind of sitting with them in their, you know, inherited written forms. And I tried to think with the things that they shared with their audiences and the poetries that have met their communities. And Rumi's this Sufi, very thoughtful and philosophic writing. He's a ruminator. And then Khalid wrote in the Ghazal form. And then Mir also wrote in the Ghazal form, but he wrote the saddest stuff, and it's just so sorrowful and so longing. So Mir's tears, and then Faiz is this revolutionary poet, and this image of what it is to bring literature into the fight for freedom. And I just saw myself surrounded by them in prayer.
In prayer. But maybe there's a sense of spirituality.
Yeah.
It's the third concoction that's in your poem.
Maybe that's it, Michael. I think you've put the right words to it. I think that's got it.
Yeah, I think so. Because I've heard that throughout, a sense of spiritual essence, a sense of spiritual being. Well, one last question. When people hear your work, they usually want more, I'm sure. I know I want more. What's next for you as a poet?
Next is moving to San Diego. So I'm in the process of moving and relocating to San Diego, and hope to continue investing into a new community there. So wherever that takes me, whatever open mics are out there to be found.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, Drew. I mean, I wish you the best of luck. I enjoyed talking to you tonight, and I wish you nothing but the best.
Michael, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Good night, everyone.